everybody, and welcome to episode 169 of the Spoiler Alert Podcast, brought to you by MovieOutsiders.com. This is Danny, and I'm here with Mike, and tonight we'll be discussing the new indie comedy, The Big Sick, starring Kumail Nanjiani. Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Danny. How are you doing?
I am doing extremely well.
We're at 169. This is a milestone episode.
Well, it's not on the fives. It's not like a round number.
I just feel like it's a milestone. It's one more than our last one. It seems huge to me all of a sudden.
This is a big deal.
Yeah.
Let's celebrate. Yeah. I agree. I'm going to get drunk after this episode.
Sounds good. I'm wasted now.
You know, in our last episode, that would be 168, one less than a milestone, Baby Driver, we talked a little bit about the fact that movie theaters are doing a lot of great things to win your business these days, right? They're improving the experience for all of us moviegoers with high-end food, open full bars, craft beers, leather reclining seats. I mean, really, really great
new projection
sound
and audio technology. Yeah, constantly
absolutely
getting retrofitted with all that. Yeah.
But I got to tell you, I saw this movie, The Big Sick, in Chicago in an AMC theater downtown, and I had one of the worst seats I've ever sat in. I mean, I had to sit in almost the second row.
Is it worse than when I took you to the Marvel movie that one time?
We were also, I think, in the second row. Yeah. So it was about as bad.
Okay.
And now, the whole time I'm thinking, why is this seat even here? Who gets this seat? Who chooses it? No one chooses to sit here. This is like the you showed up 5 minutes later than you should have seat. And even though you paid the same price as the guy who's got a great seat 12 rows back,
sure,
you're stuck here like a loser, craning your neck. Everything's blurry. I mean, we were watching it. Obviously, this movie's a comedy, sort of like a romantic comedy. It was okay, but I could not fathom sitting through some action movie.
Yeah.
Or like, if you try to watch the new Transformers movie from that seat, I think you just vomit.
Was it so sold out that you guys ended up needing to get... Wow, that's it. Well, that's impressive. But it does make you wonder, like, when designing the theater... I mean, I guess you're just trying to optimize getting people in there. I mean, think of football stadiums, like the seats behind poles. Like,
yeah, but normally those are discounted seats,
true,
right? Like, it's
true.
An obstructed view. Like, everyone's sort of right up front. Like, this seat kind of sucks.
Yeah.
You can have it. But
it sucks.
You shouldn't pay $15 to sit in this seat.
Yeah.
And I just can't imagine that anyone covets these first few rows.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe like the last row on the floor. You know, once you move into the stadium for stadium seating, you're totally fine. But I mean, it's just ridiculous. And with all the technology and all the upgrades theaters are doing, I think I just give a plug to all our theater owner listeners, because there, I'm sure, are many.
Thousands.
Thousands. But just take care of the seats. Like, there shouldn't be a bad seat in the house.
Shouldn't you just be thankful that there wasn't, like, a kid's playground right in front of your row? Like it wasn't one of those theaters that actually has a jungle gym inside?
We posted think, on Facebook, on our Facebook page. Yeah, there's some theaters that are putting in a playground in the theater.
That's no good.
That's absolutely no good.
You know, I don't want to offend the thousands of subscribers who are AMC theater owners, but what I can't get past when I go to an AMC theater is that the self-serve butter that you get to put on the popcorn and how it looks. Like, it's clearly not real butter, and it comes out of that weird little dispenser that you get to self-dispense, and it makes me not feel good. Like, I don't get it, because it's so gross to me, and I once saw them change the big bag of that fake butter underneath the counter, and then from then on I can't do that.
So you don't get any butter topping on your popcorn?
Not at AMC. I don't get popcorn at AMC theaters, because I need butter on my popcorn, and I'm not gonna get that stuff on it. So that's okay. All I can think of when I hear AMC.
It's a little surprising to me, just given that, like, it sounds like you were sort of surprised that movie theater popcorn maybe wasn't great for you.
No,
and that was news.
No, I fully digested that. I like theaters with the real butter. You can't beat that. Going to a movie, getting a popcorn, having the real butter poured over it, we actually have to kind of scoop it out and shake it up. Love that. And that AMC dispenser is so gross.
I like how much we on the podcast get to know about you, Mike. I'm glad that we know that you're sort of like a popcorn butter snob. That's great. I mean, that's an interesting little tidbit that maybe not everybody who knows you knew.
So, tell us something about you that we don't know. I might know, but not everybody would know.
I am fine with artificial butter.
All right. Fascinating.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't need popcorn when I go to a movie, but if I did, it's fine.
Yeah, I've never seen you eat popcorn at a movie.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. All right.
Mm-mm.
Well, we've taken a tangent.
Yeah. So this movie, I just also real quick wanted to ask, whatever happened to romantic comedies? Remember when that was like a huge thing? That was a huge genre? People want to call this movie a romantic comedy, and I would sort of say it is not. At least not in the way that, like,
I would say that it is.
You've Got Mail.
Sure.
Is.
When I think romantic comedy, I think Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, for sure. Like Sleepless in Seattle is sort of the high bar on that, right?
Or like Reese Witherspoon's first 25 movies.
Right.
Right. Matthew McConaughey had like a dozen going there.
No, I think last year we classified, or was it 2 years ago? Trainwreck, the Amy Schumer movie. That was kind of a romantic comedy, right?
It was a date movie, I think, but would not call it a romantic comedy. So anyway, okay, I was saying this I wouldn't call a romantic comedy either, but it feels like that's the genre it's going to be shoehorned into.
Yeah, I would call it that. I'm interested in what makes you think, maybe we should wait till we get into the movie, but I'd be interested in what makes you think that it's not a romantic comedy. But.
Well, why don't you hit us the plot recap and we'll all decide if it sounds like the plot of a romantic comedy.
Got it. Okay. All right. Sounds good. So this is the story of Kumail, who is a Pakistani living in Chicago, where his traditional Muslim family is attempting to set him up in an arranged marriage. After one of Kumail's stand-up comedy gigs, he meets Emily, a white non-Muslim. They hook up, and the one-night stand blossoms into a full-blown relationship. As Kumail attempts to keep his family's matchmaking a secret from Emily, he also attempts to keep her a secret from his family. And when she discovers this, they have an ugly breakup. And soon thereafter, she is admitted to the ICU with a severe infection, put into a medically induced coma, upon which Kumail meets her parents. While tense at first, their hearts eventually soften to Kumail. But even Emily's eventual miraculous recovery might not be a fully happy ending for Kumail, who has since realized his deep love for her and the importance of that relationship, even more so than his background and tradition. And that's the big sick. That to me sounds like a romantic comedy. I don't know. What?
I'm going to go ahead and say, first of all, right off the bat, I really enjoyed this movie. But I think one of the things I like the most about it is this is a tightrope of a film for me. Because the way you describe the plot, it sounds like the plot to While You Were Sleeping with
Sandra Bullock. Yeah.
Yeah. Like kind of a, not necessarily, but it could have been really cheesy. And also this movie balances the comedy, the drama, and sort of the high stakes of this poor girl who's in a coma through the, you know, I just felt like there was a lot going on in this movie, and I felt like it was all really well balanced, really well done, and there were many opportunities for this thing to go flying off the rails and become a hot mess.
Sure.
And they did a really good job, I thought.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it as well. I agree with you completely. I think she's in the most precarious position, obviously. She's in a medically induced coma in the ICU. It's going on days I don't know how many days, but it's a rough going. But the stakes for him are super high, too. Like, him choosing her over any of the Muslim women that his family's trying to set him up with means that's it for the family. You're out. You're done. You're dead to us. And, wow. I mean, that's heavy stuff. So, I mean, the stakes are high for both of them, yet it's lighthearted enough to not get, like, super Manchester by the Sea on me.
Right. Right. It's not a heavy film, but it's not a cliche caricature. It's not like My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Correct.
You know, it touches on a lot of the Pakistani traditions of his family, but not mocking them necessarily.
Correct. I think there's one recurring gag that, you know, there's always the same line when a woman shows up for dinner at the house, and that's played throughout the movie. But you're right. It's not just the constant barbs about your ethnic heritage that you see in My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Like this was funny.
Yeah, And that recurring line I felt was more of sort of a gag and an insight into the character of Kumail's mom than it is necessarily, you know, something about their culture. I also thought the romance that's portrayed between Emily and Kumail was really nice. It was sweet. It was funny. They both are very charming. I felt like it was one of the most natural, sort of honest and real life dating relationships I've seen in a movie. Mm. There really wasn't a lot of contrivances. It wasn't like they said two words to each other and suddenly they were whisked off in love. It wasn't something where they wrote letters to each other in secret for 40 years and then finally met. This is two people who met, hooked up, because there was an immediate attraction, and then that sort of blossomed into something further and then further and then further. And I thought that was really well done. So I thought they had great chemistry. What'd you think?
I also thought that they had great chemistry. I liked both of them as actors, and I really liked, I'll be interested to hear what you think. I liked Ray Romano and Holly Hunter as her parents a great deal. There were a couple instances where I thought that their portrayals were a little off, a little weird. Some stuff seemed a little odd to me, some certain lines here and there. But I thought that they were great. I've never seen... this is a romantic comedy, but the role that Ray Romano is playing is definitely not Everybody Loves Raymond, and it's not a comedic role. Right. And he had the chops for it, and I thought that he was fantastic. I thought that you could tell he disliked this guy from the beginning, but not in the way, Kumail, meaning the guy, but not in the way that his wife, played by Holly Hunter, disliked him. And she dislikes him because he's now broken up with his daughter. And you know, she knows only one side of this story and the circumstances of the breakup. You don't quite know why dad's character doesn't love him. Is it just because of his heritage? Is that the reason he doesn't love him? But you can also see him warm to him quickly. And I think that he gives him... When mom's laying into him, he always gets the sympathetic eyes from dad, from Ray Romano. And I just found his performance really powerful and moving.
For sure. And he plays sort of a wimp, right?
Yeah.
Like he's the guy, Holly Hunter's the real tough one. Like there's a scene in the comedy club where Kumail's getting heckled and Holly Hunter stands up for him and basically tries to beat the crap out of the heckler.
Right.
I mean, she goes off, whereas Ray Romano just sort of sits there, right? His character, like that scene sums them both up so perfectly in that she's willing to throw down, scream and fight and push back. And he just sort of sits and takes it.
Yeah.
And he lets a guy talk to his wife, you know, inappropriately and a whole bunch of other things. So I agree. He gives Kumail a lot of sympathy, especially when Holly Hunter's sort of laying into him. It's sort of like, I've been there, you know, you don't. Maybe he deserves this, maybe he doesn't, but I know it doesn't feel good.
Right, right.
So he tends to give him sort of the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah,
so
I loved him
both.
But
I agree. Seeing Ray Romano, he was funny, but not at all trying to be funny. And in fact, one of his the character trait is that he's not a funny man, that he has a poor sense of humor. And again, he plays it really delicately in that he could have overplayed that and it could have come off as really sour and dumb. And it's just very sweet and human. And I thought all the actors really, I mean, everybody on screen, I thought really did a terrific job. I also liked the first scene when Kumail comes to the hospital in that it really also realistically portrayed sort of the banality of going to a hospital.
Yeah.
And the vagueness of she's sick, but we don't really know what. She doesn't look good. And it's sort of like, hey, I hope you're all right. And there's the awkwardness between them. And then it just turns on a dime where her situation becomes much more grave. And I felt like – but not in a melodramatic way. I don't know how else to – I feel like I keep saying the same thing. But it just felt really real and really well done. And they got that just right, I thought.
A lot of those scenes hit very close to home with me. Obviously, you know that we had a daughter with a serious medical condition a couple years ago. And – watching the two parents unable to talk to one another, unable to agree on what to do next, fighting when they're not mad at each other in any real sense at all, just mad at the situation the world has placed them in, hit very close to home. And I think that they did get it 100%. Like, I remember thinking, you know, they go to just seeing them sitting, eating in a cafeteria, trying to choke down a sandwich because you need to eat at some point. Yet having gone through that myself, you don't want to eat. Like you need to eat. Your body recognizes you need to eat, but there's nothing that you want to consume. There's no joy in food. There's no joy in the drink. Right. Like, and you're watching them go through that. It was really interesting and funny at times to watch them go through that with Kumail, because you know he's just met them hours, days earlier, and is the odd man in the situation. But I think that they got it pitch perfect. The banality of the hospital, the music in the waiting room, the newspapers strewn about, the conversations with doctors that you're having about very personal matters that anybody around you can hear at any given time. It all rang very true.
Yeah. And now, for those of you who don't know or haven't read, this movie is not necessarily a true story, but it's an adaptation of how Kumail and his now wife met and fell in love. And in fact, his wife, Emily, is a co-writer of the screenplay. So I don't know how much of this, of course, is true and how much of this hews exactly to their story. But I just felt like, you know, that the authenticity, the having been there, done that, really, really rings true. I will say one thing I didn't like because I didn't get it was throughout the movie, Kumail is working on a one-man show about Pakistan. And I can't decide. I couldn't decide. I still can't. Whether it was,
it a comedy?
A serious one-man show where he's trying to be dramatic, or was it like a satire of a one-man show? Like, is he skewering one-man shows and trying to get the audience to like buy into the ridiculousness of these one man shows, or was it sincere? And I still can't decide, having thought about it for days and days.
And you see it a couple times. Like it's prominent in the film. It's a big plot point. But yeah, I'll tell you the thing that I disliked most, and you can tell me if you disagree with me. But I really struggle. The whole device here is that he wronged her severely, and then she got sick, and then he comes to her aid, so he's, you know, kind of heroic, even though he was so, so awful to her. I don't think he was bad to her. Like, I don't get what Holly Hunter Mom's deal was. I don't get what she told Mom that he did that was even so, like, so we learned that she was previously married and it had been a very bad marriage, and they've been dating for weeks or months at the time that she chooses to reveal that to him. I guess that's fair that you reveal that in the time that you want to, but the whole breakup that they have is based on the fact that he finally confesses to her that his parents are desperately trying to set him up with a Muslim, probably Pakistani woman. And it blows up after that, you know, he's not certain that he can leave his family. He has no interest in any of these women. He's totally devoted to her. He loves her. He's never dated any of these women. And she found out about it because she was rooting through his things. So I don't get quite how he's such a villain at the point that she gets sick. Like, sure, you probably should have told her, but that seemed a little weird to me.
I knew that you would defend him and that you would think he did nothing wrong. Like, I knew coming into this, you would not think...
I did not say that he did nothing wrong. In fact, I just said he should have told her earlier. But you could say the same thing about her. Like, why didn't she confess on the first date that she'd been married previously? Why he only learned that a week prior. I don't get what the tit for tat here should be.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. I think, you know, if we go back to your plot recap and, you know, you're sort of saying he's working to keep her secret from his family and his family kind of secret from her, and he's avoiding her family because he doesn't want to meet them because he sort of knows this isn't really going anywhere. He's really loving it. He's really invested, but it's probably not going to last because his family's never going to let it last. You know, A, I think that's the problem. She's fully invested and feels that he isn't. And then B, I also think that was all done... It could have come off as really wacky, like a really wacky sitcom-y.
Sure, yeah, right.
Romantic comedy, cliche vibe. And again, it's not. He's a human in a tough situation with commitments on both sides. He loves his family. He's really into this woman. Those two things don't mix. He's really just avoiding the whole issue on both sides, right? He could bring it up with his family and have the talk and go through that. He could tell his girlfriend, here's the deal, and be honest with her, and he just doesn't. So, you know, I think that's the real problem. He sort of pusses out and avoids the whole thing.
Right.
Till it's far too late. But I agree. I agree that I thought Holly Hunter, her reaction seemed viciously over the top.
And I would say that when Emily wakes up in the hospital, like, her whole, why are you here? I don't want to see your reaction. Now, of course, we know what's been happening for the last week. We know he's been there at her bedside, that he saved her life, that, but yada, yada, yada. Okay. But I really do feel the vitriol directed his way is a little over the top. Like,
yeah.
He didn't shoot her. He didn't cheat on her. Right. He didn't, like, right. What is this?
Yeah. No, I think that some of the reactions are a little over the top, but you also never know what Emily told her mom. And, of course, her mom's in a heightened emotional state because her daughter's sick and she's very worried. So she may have reacted at a 6 on another day, but he's catching her on a 10.
Right.
So, you know, she's sort of over the top. And, yeah, but it does seem – it seems a little overblown, but I thought it added to, and I also like the first few scenes at the hospital where Kumail's sort of still deciding if he wants to be there.
Yeah.
He's not quite sure, because he could have just walked away and been done with Emily and been done with her family and just moved on. And he's sort of not sure yet how he really feels about the whole situation. It takes him a little while. And I also thought that was pretty honest.
Yeah.
To say. But I will ask, what's up with stand-up comedians never being very funny in movies or on TV?
You're right.
You get some talented performers in this movie. You know, A.D. Bryant from Saturday Night Live is in here. And all their comedy sets, like, I barely laughed once.
Yeah, right.
I don't get it.
Well, is it that they're trying to make them look like very amateur stand-up comedians? Is that the device?
Oh, of, you know, so like, we're just playing it down. You're suggesting here that they're playing at the junior varsity level because these are supposed to be JV comedians on their way up.
Yeah.
Not showing us their full chops because we know these are very funny people.
Maybe.
Capable of being very funny. Well, right. That's very forgiving of you. Oh,
yeah, maybe.
All right. Do you think that this might be the first movie ever to tackle the need to take a when you're dating somebody and you don't know when and where you can comfortably
I don't recall. That was a hilarious scene, and yeah. I don't recall ever seeing that sort of scene in a movie before, and I was laughing throughout. Yeah, I mean, like, and of course it's her that has to take the so it's got to be more horrifying for the girl.
Well, and they're playing the scene up. I thought, here we go, this is her medical issue.
This is her getting sick, yes.
Yeah, right. Or she has diabetes or something, and she's got to go take medicine, or she needs she needs a cinnamon roll at 3 a.m. because her blood sugar's low and she knows something. And no, she just needs to poop.
She really needs
and doesn't
to poop,
want
to
poop because his walls are really thin and his roommate's out there.
Yeah, right.
And I thought that was just great.
What's up with the 9/11 conversation in the hospital at in the cafeteria? It was so the joke I found funny. The joke,
for sure. His response, yeah.
The punchline is great. But I felt that it was so out of left field that the dad character, played by Ray Romano, would be telling this guy, I've always wanted to ask a Muslim about 9/11. Like, of course, it's played for laughs. It's supposed to be a gag, but it's like, this is like a 10-year-old joke that you just needed to shove into a movie somehow. And it just seemed so out of character for him to have that conversation with him. Number one, you're just trying to choke down a sandwich because your daughter's in severe problems in this hospital right now. You don't want to have any kind of conversation with anybody. Two, are you really going to ask that? He seems like a really well-educated, smart, sympathetic guy. Why bring that up? That it just seemed so out of nowhere.
I will grant it felt a little out of nowhere, but I did think it was very funny. And when the conversation starts, I thought, oh, wow, we're going to go down this path and we're going to have this kind of intense dialogue and tackle this big subject. And then it was like, no, we're not. We're gonna say a
we're
joke
gonna
and move
joke.
On.
Yeah.
And I also thought that, you know what, like, it sort of addresses the elephant in the room in that, yes, Kumail is Pakistani. He's Muslim. But this whole movie, and even though it's talking about his family and their culture and these traditions, it also doesn't have to all be about that.
Right,
and,
right.
So I actually appreciated that they sort of had some fun and moved on. What is up with Kumail's roommate? He seems like the worst comedian and a terrible roommate and a dud of a human.
Oh, see, I didn't think he was a terrible roommate at all.
They have to come in and he has to explain, like, do not engage. Do not talk to him at all. Just don't make eye contact.
I just think it's because he's a dud and a sad dude. Like, he was the guy that, like, was like, can I get you a hot dog when I run out? And then he like, stayed by the door to make sure that everything went down okay with mom and dad. Like, I thought he was a really good guy. Just a total loser.
Total dork.
Yeah.
What's up with at the end when Kumail is moving to New York, he packs up his terrible 4x3 television, which takes up like 8 cubic feet in the back of that station wagon? Maybe you just leave that TV.
It's like the only TV you could probably fit in a Manhattan apartment when you're a stand-up comic just getting started. Like that's probably all they had room to watch TV on out there.
I suppose, but it seemed pretty weak. And what's up with Emily's overalls at the end of the movie? That the straps of her overalls have like dog leash clicks.
I don't know that I noticed.
I was sort of, my brain was like, oh my god, what on earth? Why did they dress her in that? That's tragic.
I didn't notice that.
I noticed. Buddy, are you ready for 5 questions?
I think I'm ready. Lay them on me.
All right. Let's 5 do it. Listeners submitted questions. Thank you, listeners. Question number 1. The co-screenwriter and star, Kumail Nanjiani, grew up a Sunni in a Shiite-majority Pakistan, a religious conflict I've never fully understood. Could you please now explain it to me?
In the best interest of keeping it tight, to keep these episodes tight, we're going to have to... Let's dedicate the next episode to that entirely. We'll skip it tonight.
So episode 170 will be a full... dissertation, yes. On the Sunni-Shiite conflict over the centuries by you.
Correct. We'll make it a video podcast. I have some PowerPoint slides.
Excellent. Well, great. Thank you. Okay. Question number 2. Is Hollywood in the middle of a South Asian invasion?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what that means. Like,
I don't know either what this person... I don't know what they were talking about. I just read the questions as submitted, man. I don't fact check. I don't...
We've had, like, a couple of movies where South Asia is featured prominently. Is that
so
what we're getting?
A huge swell. On a percentage gain basis, it's like 5,000% more than
there you go. There you normal. Go. Fair enough.
Question number 3. If you and your wife co-wrote a screenplay about your courtship... what would the plot, the main plot device be?
Oh, boy. I'm trying to think of my wife and I co-writing a screenplay. That sounds like a project I can't wait to get into. It would probably have to be, you know, something about how she kind of righted me. I guess we'd have to go down this route. Another thing you didn't know about me. It would probably have to be that prior to us dating, I was a serial killer. And she set me on the path to redemption. I no longer murder people.
That's actually sounds like a really exciting movie.
Yeah, yeah. Which,
and that's a genre matchup I don't think we've seen. The serial killer thriller / romantic comedy.
Edgar Wright to put that one together. Yeah.
As long as I had a lot of visual razzle-dazzle, you know I'd be on board.
Right.
Question number 4. Just how nervous are you about your daughter dating someday?
Oh, very. This is the thing that keeps me up at night. I'm very nervous about her dating.
How nervous are you about your son dating?
Pretty nervous.
Okay, good. I thought you were going to say, oh, not at all. And I call you a sexist pagan.
No. I it's just further away. Claire is way closer to that age than my son.
Fair
is, so,
enough.
Yeah. How about you? How do you feel about that?
Terrified. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Question number 5. Without using the word Muppet, what 3 words would you use to describe Ray Romano's voice?
Nasal would be one. That's fair, right?
That's a word. Okay.
Okay.
That's one word.
Grating.
Okay. 2.
And Muppet-like.
Oh, you used Muppet.
I'm not supposed to use Muppet.
That's the one word you weren't allowed to use. It's a pretty simple exercise that you failed spectacularly. Well, that was
Game
five
of Taboo.
Questions.
Good questions. Thank you, good listeners. Questions. Yeah.
Mike, your final thoughts on The Big Sick?
I really enjoyed The Big Sick. It was, like last week, another breath of fresh air this summer of duds. You know, you and I have both seen movies other than the ones that we are reviewing for Spoiler Alert. And we've been disappointed across the board most of the time. And I really enjoyed this one and would recommend it.
I, too, would highly recommend it. I thought it was fresh and funny, charming, and not a disposable romantic comedy.
Yeah, good.
Absolutely worth seeing, and seeing on a date with your spouse or with a significant other in the theater, you'll have a good
with
time.
With your spouse and a significant other?
Right. Also, don't sit in the first two rows. Those are terrible seats. The theater shouldn't even sell tickets to them.
Just, like, rope them off or use them for, like, CPR training or something. What do you do up there? I don't know.
I don't know. Coming up next, we'll be seeing Christopher Nolan's World War II film Dunkirk, which we will hopefully be seeing in 70mm, and encourage all of our subscribers to do the same.
Thanks for listening to the Spoiler Alert Podcast. Please visit us online at movieoutsiders.com, where you can see what films we'll be discussing next, comment on our recent episodes, suggest movies to review or topics to discuss, or submit questions for the five questions segment of the podcast. Stop by and visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/movieoutsiders, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at @movieoutsiders. If you're a fan of the show, we'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes, Overcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast subscription service you use. We'll be back again next week with another episode, but until then, enjoy the movies.